playing for the American League Championship. I don't believe it. It just continues. My
oh my. High fly ball into right field. She is gone.
Oh, drives one. Right field. Did he do it? He did. Are you kidding me?
Another week, another episode of the FSS Plus podcast. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome in indeed. I am your host, Joe Doyle, and this is going to be another episode of the podcast. And I'm running solo today. I'm going to be your one and only on this Thursday evening. We are at the 25% mark in Major League Baseball. Over a quarter of the season is already behind us, folks. Did you know that? If you're listening at home or on the way home, did you know that we are already 25% of the way done with another Major League Baseball season? What a bummer, man. God, I feel like, you know, you wait all, and I'm not saying that the end is near, but you wait all winter for this, and man, it's gone before you know it. Most teams at, you know, 45 games, 43, 44, 45 games now, that is, you know, almost 30% of the way in a lot of cases. But I wanted to start this thing out by talking about some things, some surprises in baseball, talk about the standings, talk about what's real and what's not. But speaking of what is real and what is not, I want to talk about some struggling stars. And we will discuss whether or not it is time to buy or time to sell those players from a, well, let's call it a fantasy slash bounce back slash their careers perspective. Are they on the way out of being full-time regular players? After that, we are going to talk about the worst contracts in baseball. You know, there was an interesting Twitter thread that came through this week talking about the worst contracts in baseball. I wanted to give my 2 cents there. What are some of those contracts that, boy, you wish that you could get out of them right now? And then finally, we will end this show, as we always do, with a little college baseball, a little MLB draft, some amateur baseball style on the FSS Plus podcast. I'm going to make a case for why a college pitcher should go number two to the Cincinnati Reds. Nobody talking about it, but I think it's something to consider. All right, I teased it, and I want to get right into it. Standings in Major League Baseball. Some surprises, some not so surprises. I mean, when I say that, I mean the Atlanta Braves are 26-14. Surprise. Nobody could have foreseen that coming. But let's talk about some of these teams that have just come out of the gates really, really hot. And I want to start with the Milwaukee Brewers. Can we talk a second for the Milwaukee Brewers? I mean, listen, I know the NL Central isn't the best. It's not the best division on earth, right? But I think you should put a little bit of respect on this team's name. I mean, William Contreras is one of the best hitters in baseball. Did we see that coming? I don't know if I did. I mean, Rhys Hoskins to the IL, which is a bummer. Bryce Turang has been excellent. He has really come into form. Willy Adames in a platform year is off to the races. Sal Frelick is developing into the bat that I think everybody kind of thought he would be. But the biggest question with the Brewers coming into this season was, are they going to pitch? Are the Milwaukee Brewers going to be able to pitch enough to sustain? And man, Freddy Peralta is looking like, you know, if this thing goes downhill, which I don't think it will, the division's not good enough for it to go downhill. Freddy Peralta is one of the most valuable pieces on the trade market this year. Shoot, Brian Hudson has been good. Joe Ross has been, if nothing else, a solid piece in the rotation. I'm liking what I'm seeing from this team. I really am. Colin Ray has been good. Now, is it sustainable? I think pieces of it are. I think the Joe Ross and Colin Ray train is probably going to derail at some point. You know, they just don't miss enough bats. And the way that the game is shaped right now, you have to be able to miss bats to avoid damage. So I'm not sure if they're going to be the starters that the Milwaukee Brewers need them to be. But, you know, the bats, I don't think I can say enough about the leaps that William Contreras and Bryce Turang have made for this organization. They're going to be good. Christian Yelich, this thing falls apart, Christian Yelich probably going to be a pretty sought-after piece at the deadline if Milwaukee buys down some of that contract. This is a good team. And it's a dynamic team. Frelick, Adames, Bowers can run a little bit. Turang. I think Joey Ortiz could end up being a pretty nice piece. Now, walks have done a lot of the heavy lifting on his year, but he's looking like a full-time player. So the Milwaukee Brewers, I had to bring them up. 26-17, they are 9 games over 500. They're doing it at home. They're doing it on the road. And when you play the Pirates and you play the Cardinals, and we'll see what ends up becoming of the Cincinnati Reds, but when you play teams like that, so many times every year, you're going to have the opportunity to win a lot of games. And I think this Brewers team could be a 90-win. I think it could be a 90-win organization. So that's a bit of a surprise to me. I think I called it at the beginning of the year. I think I did say the Brewers have sneaky good pitching. It, you know, there's been some luck involved, but they're a sneaky good team. And speaking of sneaky good teams, you would be remiss. Now, I'm wearing the hat. I just want to say it right now. I called this. I put it on my name. Said it in January. Kansas City Royals are going to be an issue in the AL Central. They are going to be an issue. They are 26-19. They are 15-8 at home. 500 on the road. Not bad. Getting, you know, they're getting work done. Now on the offensive side, it's pretty much only been Salvador Perez and Bobby Witt Jr. Blanco's been okay. He's striking out quite a bit. There's been a little bit of luck on the BABIP side. But all in all, it's been mostly Salvador Perez and Bobby Witt Jr. But I told you in January, the free agent spree, the approach that the Royals took this winter was perfect. It was perfect. You knew Cole Reagans was going to be a good player. You knew Brady Singer was going to be a good player. You just had to polish up around the edges. And Seth Lugo is exactly that. He spins the crap out of the ball. That works in today's game. Michael Wacha has a nasty slider to go with one of the better changeups in baseball. Alec Marsh can rush it up to 97. I mean, this Royals team, you know, Reagans and Lugo are two of the most valuable starting pitchers in the game right now. Now, again, I don't think Lugo is going to be this player all season. He's not going to sustain a 1.66 ERA, especially not striking anybody out. But Brady Singer, despite the hiccup that he had in Seattle over the weekend, or early in the week, I should say, is proving to be one of the more steady, reliable sinker slider starters out there. Michael Wacha is going to give you a solid, steady season. He's got a 4.71 ERA right now, but he gets the job done. You know, he punches tickets when he needs to punch it. He's a veteran presence. The Kansas City Royals are for real. I'm not sure if they have enough guns in the bullpen. I'll be the first to say that. I think Angel Zerpa is good. I think Will Smith, even though it hasn't been good, will be good. Chris Stratton is, it's Chris Stratton, guys. Chris Stratton is going to provide value over the course of this season. I said in January, the Kansas City Royals need to survive the war of attrition. And it's going to be the biggest hurdle that they have in 2024. They don't have many reinforcements beyond what's on the 26-man roster. But they've proven, they have shown, what's on the 26-man roster is good enough to compete all season long in the AL Central. They should beat up the Tigers all year. They should beat up the White Sox all year. And after that, really, it's a rat race between them, the Guardians, and the Twins. I would say the Guardians have overachieved a tick. I don't think they're the offensive team that they've shown to be so far. And the Twins have had a roller coaster of a season. I mean, 24-19 with, I believe, a 9 or a 10 game winning streak in there. We'll see what the Minnesota Twins are the rest of the way. So I'm enjoying it, man. The Brewers, the Royals, a couple of really fun teams. A couple of really young teams. Teams to certainly get behind. But I led this thing off by talking about some older players, some players that are maybe past their prime and they're struggling. And it's time to really decide if you're in that organization, is it panic mode? Are we worried? You know, where is this thing going? Is it even possible to sell these players? And I want to start in Philly with a player that has been one of the best hitters in Major League Baseball for the better part of a decade. And that's Nicholas Castellanos. Now, I want to preface this by saying Castellanos is a career 274 hitter with a career 111 WRC+. As of Thursday, May 16th, Nicholas Castellanos is he's slashing .206, .276. He has a .309 slug, a 24% strikeout rate, an 8% walk rate. He has 4 home runs and 16 RBIs. Those numbers aren't that bad. They're not. They're not horrible. The defense has been horrible. On the offensive side, I would actually go as far as to say there's been some bad luck. I mean, a .256 BABIP for a guy that hits the ball as hard as he has generally hit the ball, that's going to come up. Castellanos is enjoying the highest walk rate of his career at 8.3% right now. That's encouraging. And the strikeout rate, 24%, is 4% lower than 2023, where he had a very solid offensive year. His numbers are being dragged down because of the slugging percentage, because of the strikeout rate, because of the bad batted ball data. A 70 WRC+, I would be very surprised if that did not end up at or above 100 on the year. So all of that is to say, I led this off by saying, is it time to concern yourself with Castellanos? Are we worried about Nicholas Castellanos? He's got this year. He's got 2025. He's got 2026. He has $40 million more on the books after the 2024 season. I am not concerned. I'm not. I think Castellanos is going to right the ship. 32 years old. I think he's going to be just fine. He's 32 all season, too, by the way. He does not turn 33 until March of 2025. Nicholas Castellanos is going to figure it out. And some of this poor batted ball luck will be in the rearview mirror in no time. But I can't say the same about Paul Goldschmidt. Okay. Guys, I'm pretty concerned about this one. And maybe it's no surprise. He's a 36-year-old first baseman who will turn 37 before the end of the season. And when you're that age, bat speed slows down. And Goldschmidt, unfortunately, has been on the decline for several years now. Going back to the year 2020, Goldschmidt has seen his strikeout rate go up every single year. 18, 20, 21, 23. This year he is at a 32.5% strikeout rate. That is so far outside of Paul Goldschmidt's norm. Like, Paul Goldschmidt has never had a strikeout rate over 25.1%. That was 2018. 25.1% is the highest he has ever had, unless you count his rookie season where he just played in 48 games, 2011, as a 23-year-old. I tend to disqualify rookie years. Paul Goldschmidt is batting 206, 291, and he is barely slugging 300. Right on the dot, 300. Good for a 75 WRC plus. So here's my concern with Goldschmidt. The guy's hitting 206 with an above league average BABIP. BABIP's at 300. He should be hitting more than he is hitting. He's got four homers, which is doing a lot of heavy lifting on his slash line. It's doing a lot of heavy lifting on his WRC+. He does still have, impressively, for a 36-year-old first baseman, Goldschmidt still has two stolen bases. Five RBIs. He is running the lowest walk rate of his career. Now, it's still above league average, which I think is a very important distinction when you talk about walk rate. He's running a 9.5% walk rate. The lowest walk rate of his career was 2021, where it was 10%, almost on the dot. So 9.4% walk rate, and part of that might be pitchers are seeing that his bat has slowed down, and they think they can just beat him, and they're challenging him more. They're not pitching around Paul Goldschmidt. He's not scaring anybody anymore. 206, 291, 300 for a 75 WRC+. Paul Goldschmidt has never had a WRC plus under 117 going all the way back to his rookie year. He's never in his career. He has never had a WRC plus under 117. I'll do you one better. He has only had two seasons under a 124 WRC plus. And that was 2019, which I mentioned, and his rookie year at 118. This guy is a career 140 WRC+. ISO at 0.094. Yeah, I'm concerned about Paul Goldschmidt. And I think, if you really do a little bit more digging, if you go back and look at his batted ball data, that's where things really start to kind of scare you a little bit. Average exit velo this year is at 90 miles an hour. Last year, 91 miles an hour. The year before that, 91 miles an hour. The year before that, 92.5 miles an hour. You know, you go back to 2018, you go back a little ways, 92 miles an hour. His average exit velo continues to fall. His whiff rate has skyrocketed. His barrel rate is down to 34%. It was 78% last year. So it will probably self-correct a bit. But the barrel rate has fallen from if you go back to 2019, actually, let's go back to 2020. It has fallen from 85% barrel rate to 85% in 2021, to 82% in 2022, to 78% in 2023, this year, 34%. Has he fallen off a cliff? 36 years old. Paul Goldschmidt in year 15 of his career, I believe. I believe this is year 14 of his career. I think the best years are behind Paul Goldschmidt. And I know that's a cliche, but I mean that in the respect, I think maybe even the above average offensive careers are behind Goldschmidt. I kind of get the feeling he's going to be a 105 to 108 WRC plus type of guy. And at first base, you need more than that. You just need more than that. Now, Goldschmidt is going to be a free agent at the end of this season. He's making $26 million. I believe that maybe adjusted a bit. I think he might be actually making 30 this year. But Goldschmidt is going to be owed between $8 and $10 million at the trade deadline. I don't think it's any mystery that the Cardinals will try to move him. They're having a terrible start to the season. He will likely be on the move. Who buys him is to be determined, but I would have to imagine it's going to be a team with a general manager that believes his veteran presence and steady glove at first base would be an asset on top of the average bat in the lineup. Maybe you believe in the fountain of youth and you hope he just catches a second wind down the stretch. I am worried about Paul Goldschmidt. And, you know, at 36 years old, I don't know if that should be any surprise. Here's the guy that you might not have expected to be on this list. 29 years old. 29 years old with two seasons of control left in Tampa Bay. Randy Arozarena. I'm curious, to those listening, are you concerned about Randy Arozarena? I've always kind of felt Arozarena lived on this. He lives on a razor's edge, because if you go and look at his Statcast numbers, you can go back to any year, go back to 2022, go back to 2023, 2021. Let's go 2021, for example. Let me read you a stat line. 2021, 274, 356, 459. 20 homers, 20 stolen bases. Good for a 4F WAR season. If I told you that, you would think, okay, Randy Arozarena, he went 2020. He was a 4-win player. You know, that's a guy at 25 years old, a burgeoning star, right? That came right after, I believe, the 2020... postseason where he hit 9 home runs. Well, here's the thing. In 2021, Randy Arozarena had a 48% barrel rate. He had a 10 percentile whiff rate, 11 percentile strikeout rate. He was middle of the pack in walks, middle of the pack in hard hit percentage. He was well below average in expected batting average and expected slugging percentage. His expected batting average was .222. He hit .274, guys. He had a batting average 52 points above what his expected batting average was when you take into consideration batted ball events. His expected slugging percentage was .369. He slugged .459. That's 90 points higher than what StatCast says it should have been, 28% strikeout rate. This is a guy that seemed to catch lightning in a bottle. I mean, he seemed to just catch, dare I say, luck? Dare I say, a little bit of luck? All right, now you go to 2022, you go to the next year. Let me read you a slash. A little bit worse, but much of the same. 263, 327, 445, 20 home runs. Again, 32 stolen bases. The walk rate falls to 7%, but the strikeout rate also falls, 24.2%. Notably, the glove gets a little worse. Still, good for a 3F WAR season, 2.9 to be exact. Now, I told you that he hit 263. His expected batting average that year, 234. That's 32 points. Again, that delta is enormous. That's enormous. That is quintessential Tampa Bay Rays. They just find a way. I mean, his launch angle sweet spot in 2022 was in the 8th percentile. He hit the ball between 10 degrees and 25 degrees. Worse than just about everybody in the sport. He was a bad base runner. He was a bad left fielder. He was an aggressive hitter. And still, a three-win player. All of that leading up to the 2024 season. Is it catching up with him, guys? Is it catching up with him? He's been one of the worst base runners again in the sport. He's been one of the worst hitters in the sport. Randy Rosarena is hitting 156, 254, 331. He's been a negative 0.2 hitter, 75 WRC plus, and all of that. He has a 75 WRC plus with 8 home runs. That tells me that when he's not hitting a homer, Randy Rosarena has been downright awful this season. Downright awful. He's been a terrible base runner. He's been a bad left fielder. He's running a 30.5 strikeout rate. He has 8 homers and 7 stolen bases. He's on his way to another 2020 season. But here's the thing. His expected batting average this season is 197. He's at 156. It's finally flipped on him. His expected slugging percentage is 357. He's at 331. He's still slugging and taking advantage of the left field porch in Tampa. But those pitches that he found a way to get on base for, they're not falling right now. I'll be the first to say it. I'm out on Randy Rosarena. I've never been a fan of the approach. I've never been a fan of the base runner. I've never been a fan of the left fielder. I'm out. He's not a guy that has natural bat speed. He's not. I mean, shoot, if you go and look at, you can go and look at bat tracking now, which I think is just, it's the coolest thing. Okay, it's the coolest thing. But mind you, the average bat speed in Major League Baseball is 72 miles an hour. That's the average bat speed. Randy Rosarena is a guy that is you know, talked about as this power hitter, you know, with what he did at T-Mobile Park, home run derby, right? It's just average bat speed, 72.7 miles an hour. He's not some decorated slugger. And I think if you have average bat speed and a piss poor approach and you're a bad base runner and you're average at best in left field, to put up some of the years that he did, I'm not saying those years were a fraud, because they weren't. Your baseball card is your baseball card, and context is everything. Some guys just have a natural knack for knowing how to hit them where they ain't. But I do think with some of those metrics, I, you know, 2021 and 2022, I don't know if it was all that legit. You know, he was labeled this star after 2020, and he followed it up with a big 2021 season. But I, you know, he's basically been a three-win player for the last three seasons. I think those years are over. I tend to think Randy Rosarena is going to be a player that is under 2 F4 this season. I think he's going to be like a 1.7, 1.8 F4. Which is just barely good enough, barely good enough, and it's on the fringes to be considered a good, reliable big league regular. And if the power slows down, I mean, right now he's on pace for 28 homers, which would be a career high. If the power slows down and nothing changes, it could be worse. Could be worse than that. So there you have it. That's Randy Rosarena. I would be worried if I were the Rays. And to be totally honest with everybody, I really, really believed. I really believed he was going to be moved at the deadline. Or this winter, excuse me. I thought if there was a player in the league that I was sure was going to get moved, it was Randy Rosarena and the $8.1 million that he's owed this season. I'm stunned that Tampa Bay elected to keep that number on their roster with some of the underlying red flags. Randy Rosarena has 2 more years of control after this year. He has 3, so 2024, he has 2025 and 2026. He will be arbitration eligible once again in 2025, and he's expected to make somewhere between $9 and $10 million at bare minimum. I think he's guaranteed at least 8.9 with the way that the arbitration system is set, with the way it's set up. I just don't think there's any way. I think there is just as good a chance Randy Arozarena is DFA'd after this season, or traded, for sure traded, than he is to be on the Rays in 2025. I can't see it. I cannot see it. So that's that. That's three hitters. Keep an eye on them. I wanted to talk about some of the worst contracts in baseball too. Because I'm not even going to say who the Twitter thread was, because I hate I think the account is a sham. But there's an account on Twitter that was talking about some of the worst contracts in baseball. And this guy or gal said, you know, Francisco Lindor owed $238 million after 2024 is the worst contract in the game. That's hogwash. We can have this conversation again after the 2026 season. Sure, but for now, Lindor's been a 5-win player over and over and over. He's a marketing, you know, gold mine. Get out of here. Just shut up with that. That's awful. But it did make me want to kind of talk about who is the worst contract in baseball. Now, there are some options here, and I'm going to work my way to who I believe is the worst contract in baseball. I'll start with, man, I'll tell you what, for me, I think the four worst contracts in baseball are just so far out in front of the rest of the pack, that, I'm just going to go in order. Three and four were a toss-up for me, and the only reason they're a toss-up is because in terms of just value added, they're abhorrent. But there's not a ton of value owed on these contracts. So I guess I'll present both of them. Together, right? Why not? I think the third and fourth worst contracts in the game are Anthony Rendon and Javier Baez. And if it wasn't for the fact that these two players are only owed 74, Baez is owed 73 over the next four seasons. He will be a free agent after 2027. 74 million? Is that what I said? 73 million over the next 3.5 seasons. Anthony Rendon is owed a little bit more than that. He is owed $77 million over the next 3 seasons. So, or 2.5 seasons. So Rendon will be a free agent after the 2026 year. They are 2.5 years away from being out from under the Anthony Rendon contract. Javier Baez is owed $74 million, and he will be a free agent after the 2027 season. So both bad in their own respects. The Baez one, it's a little bit more palatable because it's like $17 million a year over the next 3.5. It's a lot of money, but he's arguably the worst player in baseball. I mean, the defense is bad. The bat is just a nightmare. It's just a nightmare. I know that he's not striking out a whole bunch, but I mean, the approach is just god-awful. He's not hitting for any power anymore. He still isn't walking. You know, I say that he's not striking out, but he's not walking. So it's not like the approach has improved a great deal. He's hitting 167. He's slugging 222 with an on-base percentage that's barely 200. He's been worth negative one WAR this season. It wouldn't surprise me if the Detroit Tigers DFA'd Javier Baez after this season and just ate three entire years of that contract. He will be 32 in 2025, and I just do not see any avenue where he turns into anything of value outside of maybe recapturing some of his defensive value and being a number nine hitter. And like a 90s number nine hitter. You know, low average, low power, but he's got a good glove. I don't think there's any chance he makes it through this contract. I would frankly be stunned if he was a Detroit Tiger on opening day in 2026. And it would not be because he was traded. Anthony Rendon, an equally awful situation. He did get off to a reasonably good start, but he's played in just 19 games this season. He was hitting 267, 325, 307 with a square zero F-war, 18% walk rate, 18% strikeout rate, 7% walk rate. He hadn't hit a home run. He had 3 stolen bases. For the PR nightmare that he has been, I would say Anthony Rendon is right there with Javier Baez in terms of horrible contracts. He will be 34 years old in 3 weeks. He will be a free agent after the 2026 season. And again, I think this is a guy that there stands the chance that he is DFA'd if there's another PR meltdown at some point in the 2025 season. Listen, I think if you're the Angels, you're just kind of praying that he comes back, gets hot, and you can flip him for a lottery ticket. You know, he is yet to play 60 games in a season for the Angels. He has not played 60. He's played 52, 58, 47, 43, and 19 this year. It's been a bad contract. There's no way around it. It's one of the worst contracts in Major League Baseball history. It is. It's one of the worst contracts in Major League Baseball history. I mean, he's going on 5 years with the same team. If he has 200 games under his belt, it's not by much. And over the course of that contract, he has been worth roughly 4 F-war. That is a $245 million contract that may net 4 F-war. Again, I don't think he's going to get DFA'd. I think the team is hoping that he catches a heater and someone takes on most of the contract, or they take on most of the contract for a lottery ticket prospect. But those are the two. That's 3 and 4. That's 3 and 4. For me, the second worst contract in baseball, and this may be a unique take, but it's where I'm at. I think Chris Bryant is the second worst contract in baseball right now. He's owed $108 million through the next 4.5 seasons. They have him for all of 24. They have him for all of 25, all of 26, all of 27, and all of 28. And Chris Bryant has been brittle since he was in Chicago. He's played 42 games in 2022, 80 games in 2023, and he's on the IL again with just 13 games under his belt in 2024. And in those 13 games, he was running a 33% strikeout rate. Chris Bryant, at this point, has been worth -1 F-war over 3 seasons in the hitter-friendly Coors Field. He has been terrible. And he's owed $108 million committed for 4.5 more years. Chris Bryant is going to be 33 next season. His shoulders are not in good shape. His feet are not in good shape. I don't know what the rest of this contract looks like for Chris Bryant. It might be a player that retires early. It might be a player that Colorado pays to go away. The one thing I think Chris Bryant has going for him is he's a good guy. And I know that sounds disingenuous and stupid, whatever. I don't care. He's one of the good guys in the sport. And he means well. And he wants to be out there. But it just hasn't been in the cards. And, you know, the Colorado Rockies, by all accounts, paid something to the tune of, you know, $70 to $75 million more dollars than the next highest bidder for Chris Bryant's services. The talk of the town was 4 years, $85 million, 5 years, $98 million for Chris Bryant when he became a free agent in 2021, 2022, 2021, that winter. He got 182 from the Rockies in one of the most obscure, strange contracts we've ever seen. So he's on a rehab assignment with Albuquerque. Now it's a back injury. Hopefully we get to see Chris Bryant have a good, healthy season, because I do root for the guy. But for me, the worst contract in baseball, and it really isn't close, is Xander Bogaerts. And I tell you what, folks, this was the worst contract in baseball the moment it was signed. Xander Bogaerts is 31. He will turn 32 before the end of the season. He is owed 10 more years. Xander Bogaerts has 10 more years on his contract at $25.5 million a year. Now, with inflation and where payrolls are going, maybe by the time we get to 2030 or 2032, $25.5 million is what is today $16 million, and it doesn't hurt so bad. But this is an awful contract. I mean, this is a terrible contract. Was he a 4.5 win player last year? Yes. Did he hit 285, 350, 440 with 19 homers? Yes. But his defense took a step back, and he already wasn't a good athlete. He was slowing down. We may look at this Xander Bogaerts deal at the end of 2025 and say, okay, he's been worth 8.5-9 WAR over the course of the first 3 years of this season. Well, hey, guess what? There's still 8 more years after that. There's 10 more years on this contract as we sit here today. 10. Xander Bogaerts will not be a free agent. Well, frankly, he won't be a free agent. He's going to retire when this contract is up. He will be 42 years old when this contract is up. He will not be, the Padres will not be out from under this contract until 2034. Can you just think about that for a second? 2034. I don't know how AJ Preller and Peter Seidler used to work. I think they agreed on just about everything on how to run an organization. This one I don't get. Trey Turner got 13 years and it made more sense than this. So we'll see. I think if you take into consideration Bogaerts was good last year and he's off to a middling start this year, it looks like he's going to be a 2.5 win player or so. Maybe you think Chris Bryant is the worst deal in sports. That's fine. Chris Bryant will be out from under his contract at the end of 2028. Xander Bogaerts will be out after 2034. We'll see. For a guy that, if he gets hot over the next four seasons, has a chance to be a 50 F-war player for his career, we'll see. We'll see. All right. I want to end this episode with one last item. And, you know, Jason Churchill tried to get on this episode. He had some technical difficulties, but should the Cincinnati Reds be considering drafting a pitcher at 2? I know that Charlie Condon and Travis Bazzana and Braden Montgomery, Jack Caglione look like good players, great players even. But how, with the dimensions of that ballpark in Cincinnati, they're going to have an awfully difficult time getting any pitcher to ever sign there. Ever. I mean, how are you going to get free agent, like legitimate free agent starting pitchers to sign in Cincinnati? As I look at that farm system, Rhett Lauder, you know, we will see. I'm a big fan of him. I don't know if he's a top of the rotation guy, but I think at worst he's a high 3. Behind Rhett Lauder, Connor Phillips looks more like a reliever, a damn good one, but a reliever. Chase Petty has always looked like a reliever. Again, a damn good one, but a reliever. I'm bullish on Ty Floyd. We'll see what comes of that. Ty Floyd still hasn't pitched for the Reds, which makes me a little nervous, but I'm bullish. Lyon Richardson, you know, maybe a five. Cole Schoenwetter, he's got to prove that he can command the baseball. That's it. I mean, that's all. That's it for the Reds. Those are all the noteworthy pitching prospects. And I think if you look at, you know, their depth chart, Frankie Montas isn't going to be there long. Hunter Green is. But this team has Montas. They have Hunter Green. Ashcraft has shown some stuff. Andrew Abbott looks like a solid number four at worst, maybe a low three. You know, Nick Lodolo, if he can stay healthy, good player. But again, he's been hurt on and off in his career. I just think as you look at the Reds organization and you look at that stadium and you look at how they struggle to pitch, the idea of Abbott and Hunter Green and Ashcraft and you know, that starting rotation, I like the idea of adding Chase Burns to it. I mean, think about that. Chase Burns, because Chase Burns could be a big leaguer in 2025. He could. Chase Burns could be in the Reds rotation in 2025. I don't think he will be, but he could. Hunter Green, Chase Burns, Andrew Abbott, Graham Ashcraft, Rhett Lauder. And then you sprinkle in with whoever has blisters here and there, Nicholas Lodolo, Brandon Williamson. Maybe you give Connor Phillips a chance to start again. It's an interesting idea. And especially, you know, I don't know what the negotiations are going to look like. I don't have any purview into that. Well, it's certainly not this early. But if you can get Chase Burns to take, let's say, number four money, or number, we'll call it quote unquote 3.5 money at pick two. And you can really stack more talent and more talent and more talent as the draft goes on. I think that makes a little bit more sense, possibly, than Charlie Condon. An interesting idea. Think about it. Just think about it. That'll do it. Another episode of the FSS Plus podcast. See ya. So just chill till the next episode.